Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, but we start with some fantastic news, Jim. That's not an actual martini, but we simply cannot let it go unaddressed today. Folks can remember it was over 3 months ago now that crazy radical shooter, left-wing shooter, tried to kill a bunch of Republicans practicing for the congressional baseball game. One of them that was hit was Steve Scalise, the House Majority Whip. There were a couple of Capitol Hill police officers, a couple of staffers also wounded. Thankfully, no one was killed except for the shooter. Today, after months of hospitalization and rehab and grueling efforts to make it back to the House floor, Steve Scalise was back today addressing his colleagues. And here are the final moments about some of the things that he thought about and appreciates even more after what he has been through.
People all around the world that believe in freedom are counting on us as well, and we will deliver for them. That's why I am so honored to be back here in the House serving with you. God bless each and every one of you, and God bless the United States of America.
Jim, it's not often in Congress you see everyone standing and applauding and giving a standing ovation, but it was fantastic to see Steve Scalise back. It's been such a long road. It's a story that after the initial days didn't get a lot of attention, but to see him back and in action is just so gratifying.
It is. If living will is the best revenge, then I hope Congressman Scalise gets to live a long and happy life, defying the maniac who wanted to cut his life short and do the same for so many other lawmakers out of a deranged political hatred.
Well, let's move on to our good martini now. And there's not a lot that's good for the folks in Puerto Rico right now, still absolutely devastated from the effects of Hurricane Maria. Power still out for the island and supplies running dangerously low. Hospitals and all sorts of other critical facilities really in dire straits right now. Water, food running low. And there's been a lot of controversy back and forth, Jim, about what's responsible for that. Some would say it's harder to get supplies to an island than it is to someplace that's connected to other parts of the country. Others say it's a sluggish response from the U.S. government, which the Trump administration vigorously pushes back on. One of the policies that was in the crosshairs in the past few days is what's known as the Jones Act, which has been in place for 97 years and requires that goods shipped between U.S. ports must be carried by American-built vessels crewed by U.S. citizens. And the president did waive that policy when it came to providing relief for Texas and Florida. So a lot of people wanted to know why he didn't do it for Puerto Rico. There's a little bit of a debate about whether there's an issue of supplies or the ability to disperse those supplies once they've gotten there. But nonetheless, after initially hesitating, the White House has in fact authorized that the Jones Act be waived for Puerto Rico, effective immediately. Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweeting that out this morning. As far as the dispersal issue, CBS News has talked about that. Here's one of their reporters talking about a completely clogged port full of supplies, but that have not been able to get to the people.
This is unbelievable. So we're at the port here in San Juan, and we wanted to see where's the food, the supplies, everything that's needed. We got here, and here's what we were told. There are more than 3,000 shipping containers here at the port, which are just sitting here. It's got everything they need. I literally said to somebody, what's on there? And they said, whatever you need, emergency supplies, anything that a grocery store would need. But it's just sitting here. The reason why? People aren't showing up to pick it up. The people who run the port say we've got guys in line ready to put these on a truck, but nobody's showing up. The governor of Puerto Rico says they're having trouble reaching the truck drivers.
And so, again, that's CBS News. So, Jim, a lot of logistical challenges here, of course. Puerto Rico's an island. Getting the stuff they need, getting enough of the stuff they need, and then actually getting it to the people. Hopefully lifting the Jones Act will help in that process.
I concur, Greg, and let's point out that, you know, listening to that report, you know what I think might be a good thing to ship?
What's that?
Trucks.
Trucks and truck drivers, yes.
Right. Just drive them off the boat towards the people who need it. Look, I'm not much of a protectionist, but there are, I'm willing to at least give it a sympathetic hearing. I suppose I can understand the mentality of, well, by golly, if something's going to get shipped out of an American port, we want an American ship to do it. Or if it's going to go from one American port to another American port, we don't want some foreign boat coming along and stealing the business that American ships could get. we can have that argument, but this is a lousy time to have that argument, because at this point you want every ship available mobilized and bringing aid to the island. Now, as you pointed out, there's apparently a major problem of getting it to people who need it once it gets to the port. But this was just not the right time to look out for the interests of American shipbuilders. And Trump yesterday had a, you know, he was, you know, on camera and he said, look, there are a lot of people who work in the shipping industry who don't want the Jones Act lifted. We have a lot of ships out there right now. Whatever the headache of getting the aid to the people who need it, whatever headaches exist, we should not have an obscure government law be one of them. Whatever you think of the Jones Act, this is not a good time and place for it. Get as much help to people as possible, and then we can debate about whether it's a good idea. The governor requested it. I think Trump was completely right to do this, and it's good to take one needless controversy off of the table.
Yes, good job by the administration, and hopefully things will get streamlined there and the humanitarian issues can be addressed very, very quickly. You hate to see American citizens or anybody really going through that, but these are Americans who need help very, very desperately. Let's move on to another controversy from a previous administration. That would be the Obama administration. Michelle Obama, the former first lady, addressing a marketing conference in Boston on Wednesday. And Jim, she doesn't think very highly of female voters, at least the ones who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. She said, quote, any woman who voted against Hillary Clinton voted against their own voice. This is according to Boston.com. But here's more of the quote. This is even worse. It doesn't say much about Hillary, and everybody's trying to worry about what it means for Hillary. And no, no, no. What does this mean for us as women? She asked. That we look at those two candidates as women. And many of us said, he's better for me. His voice is more true to me. And then she says, to me, that just says you don't like your voice. You just like the thing you're told to like. Jim, can you imagine anyone from the right saying that and the reaction that they'd get? But did you ever think that Michelle Obama would be, in effect, making an argument against the 19th Amendment?
It's a very good way of putting that, Greg. One of the things that comes to mind here, I'm reminded of Hillary Clinton and her infamous deplorables comment. Now, you know, if you've gotten hate mail from people, you know there are deplorable people in this world, right? There's no doubt about that. But it's not good politics, and I don't think it's good for our public discourse. Look, if you're the Democratic nominee and you're running against Donald Trump, run against Donald Trump and talk about how terrible he is and how sexist he is and how racist he is and how selfish and how badly he treats people and doesn't keep his promises. There's a lot of material you can go there, but you really shouldn't go after the other side's supporters, because at least theoretically you're supposed to be trying to win them over. Now, obviously, in most cases, particularly in an era of greater partisanship and greater polarization, you're not going to see a lot of people flip over. But if you're Hillary Clinton, your problem isn't really supposed to be with the people who are supporting Donald Trump during that campaign. You're supposed to be saying, well, here's why I have better ideas. Here's why my agenda will work better. Here's why you can count on me. And she had a lot of problems with that on the account of the fact of being Hillary Clinton. but what Michelle Obama is getting to here, I guess you could say, women who voted for Trump, I think you made a terrible mistake, and here's why. What she's really kind of getting into is almost a diagnosing the character defects of women who voted for Trump. And I don't think that's that probably makes her feel good. That probably makes her feel, you know, women who voted for Hillary, we are better than women who voted for Trump. We are strong and independent and all that stuff. And they are servile. They are brainwashed and Jedi mind tricked by the men around them. I mean, just unbelievably patronizing. And there's been, you know, this is kind of, I made this point in an article last week that Democrats got the shock of their lives in Trump's victory. And not only like did they think they had a better candidate, they were absolutely convinced that they had the most airtight, perfect argument. And that airtight, perfect argument failed. And it wasn't convincing. It wasn't convincing even amongst groups that they thought they had in their back pocket. So what this really should call for is self-examination, right? They should look at that argument for Hillary and say, okay, why did this not persuade people? Why did this not convince people? Why did people not believe us when we said Hillary will be better for you? And instead of really looking at themselves, they decided, well, clearly the flaw is with the audience. Clearly the flaw is with you, the voters, for being too dumb to understand just how much better we are. And unsurprisingly, that's not the kind of message that, I mean, like, Republicans should be saying, hey, go for this, Democrats. Please insult the voters more. Please demonize and sneer at women who voted for Trump. That'll surely help you in the midterms. That'll surely help you in the 2020 election. But I just don't see why our politics would need more self-righteousness and more, you know, like you can decry sexism and then say the women who disagree with you are all a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, it shouldn't work that way, but it tends to be that way pretty consistently with the constituencies the Democrats think are their own. But when whether it's minorities or women, when they don't do what the Democrats want them to do, they let them know just how much they don't like it. So you just like the thing you're told to like. So you're all a bunch of kept women out there, apparently, if you didn't vote for Hillary. Wow. All right, let's move on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And as we mentioned yesterday, Roy Moore is the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in Alabama in the race to succeed Jeff Sessions, who resigned to become Attorney General. Chuck Todd, who is the host of Meet the Press and also does Meet the Press daily over at NBC and MSNBC, says it's time to get really scared about Roy Moore. And here is why.
Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator. And if you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore. First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution as it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office twice as Alabama's Chief Justice.
Oh, Chuck. It is true that Roy Moore has allowed his personal beliefs to conflict with court orders requiring him to do things that he didn't want to do, and it did cost him his job twice. But here's a little thing called the Declaration of Independence that I'd like to read from. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." Jim, I thought most of us learned that in school. Pretty simple concept because, as other folks have said, if the government gives you your rights, it's pretty easy for the government to take them right back.
Greg, does Chuck Todd think that every time the Founding Fathers referred to Providence, they meant Rhode Island? I mean, like, you'd beaten me to the reference of the Declaration of Independence. And here's why this is really significant. And this is why, like, you could be atheist and still find this significant and meaningful. If, you know, on all other systems of government, if the government gives you your rights, well, then the government can take them away. It's like we the rulers and the power, have decided to extend this to you. But this is conditional. We can take it back. We're being nice, so we're going to give it to you. But this is not yours to keep forever. It is entirely dependent on whether we, the people in power, still think you should have this. Now, once you say that, you know, inalienable rights, and this doesn't mean that, you know, aliens can't come and take them, right? These are rights that cannot be taken away by anybody, right? And why can they not be taken away? Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? Because they've been endowed by their Creator. Like, the person who gives it to you is God. The only person who can take it away from you is God. This is not something that some guy has decided to say, okay, I'm giving you a coupon for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but it expires at some point. What's more, think about this opening statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident. It's so obvious we don't even need to explain it. Of course, the fact that you're writing it down, the Declaration of Independence, may undermine that concept. Maybe it's not so self-evident, particularly if you look at the polls we've seen of people and how they respond to not knowing what's in the Bill of Rights and something like that. Maybe this is less self-evident than we hoped it was going to be. And when Chuck Todd can botch something like this, look, you know, there's not a shortage of controversial statements from Moore. Earlier in the week, I talked about him, you know, waving the gun around. He gets very much into that, you know, 9/11 was caused by sin and perversity and all that kind of stuff. No, 9/11 was brought about because of Al-Qaeda. Dude, that kind of theology, that kind of, well, we collectively did something wrong, so God is upset with us, so 3,000 innocent people had to die because of that. I really have huge objections to that. And that's a really good ground to criticize Roy Moore. Not, Can you believe this guy thinks our rights come from God? What a nutty theocrat. Yeah, that's not really the most compelling argument against him, Chuck Todd. And I'd say, as much as, you know, people gripe about Chuck Todd, like, I'd say that this is an uncharacteristic brain fart on his part to make this contention, to find this the most objectionable thing Roy Moore has said lately.
This might be obscure, Jim, but were you a big Family Ties fan back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
Kids on the Right obviously loved Alex Keaton. There was an episode where he had to write a paper on the founding fathers and ended up having this dream where he went back to 1776 and his dad was Thomas Jefferson in the dream, and he was helping him write the key phrases. And the first draft was, "We hold these truths to be pretty darn clear." And so Alex corrected him there. And then he said he got him to write "self-evident." So then it was, "We hold these truths to be self-evident even to a complete dope." And ultimately it got changed. But apparently it's not clear to everyone.
I was going to say, not only a good, clear reference and perfectly appropriate for the moment, Greg, you've reminded me, I believe there was a line from Skippy, the nerdy neighbor, who said, "I'm already in enough trouble for cracking that bell last week."
That's right.
This is your three martini lunch trip down memory lane to mid-80s sitcoms.
That's right. Oh, good times. Jim, have a good day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us today. And tune in again on Friday for the next three martini lunch.